Pokemon Internet season the lines.
You know, we say that, and we say it to the guests all the time, and the guests assume that we're smart and that we understand what we're talking about. I don't know if that's a real thing. I completely stole that term. Here's where I heard the term season. This is how we're going to start this one up. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Ones Ready podcast. It's just Trent and I. We're going to get 40. So when we were getting the new Sipper involved in the systems in the new unit, right, when we had getting everything installed and everything was there, we actually had an IT guy that was like, yeah, you know, it's going to be installed on Monday, but it's really not going to be ready to use until Wednesday. And myself and another stowe that were kind of like dumbfounded by this, we're like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, it's got a season. Like, you actually have to put it in, but then it has to be used. And it has to, like, if you think about, you know, the electrons running over the stuff, like they have to find pathways and do all this other stuff. And both of us looked at the guy and we're like, that's bullshit. There's no way that that's true. That is not a thing. And that's where I got that term. And that's where we say that we have to let Riverside kind of like catch up to the interwebs and call it seasoning. I don't know if that's true.
Did you ask Jeeves? Because I'm assuming you being similar of age.
Great callback. Ask Jeeves. I like it. What? I wish I actually had Encyclopedia Britannica at my house. That was a thing. When I have distinct memories of there was this, you know, my mom had this bookshelf slash desk slash computer desk sort of like combo thing that they made back in the day for those. But there was like a bookshelf on it. That's where we kept the encyclopedia. And I distinctly remember doing research via encyclopedia and going to the library and doing the Dewey Decimal System. So Ask Jeeves, fantastic callback. Now, I also did not navigate to a place this weekend using MapQuest where I had to print the directions out.
Dude, MapQuest was legit though.
It was.
I don't think it ever steered me wrong.
Do you want to, I'm going to turn this car off.
Hey, y'all, make sure you're subscribing. We had this conversation the other day, the two of us.
We did.
And I just want to tell you, like, I know that wherever you're at, it might not be the coolest thing, but your friends can't see your subscribers list. And if they can, it's a little weird. But just do us a favor, because we're looking at our stats and there's a whole pile of you listening and not subscribing. So
I brought the receipts. So yeah. On our analytics, so when you sign up for a YouTube channel, some of you may know this, some of you may not, they give you a back room to where you can look at analytics. I can tell, you know, I can see how many male, female, non-binary mafia folks listen to the podcast. I can tell you exactly how many people from different countries are listening. So this is the stat that we're talking about. So watch time from subscribers the last 30 days. Not subscribed, we have 58.2% of the audience come to us to listen to the podcast every single day. New videos every day that drop. New podcasts every, you know, sometimes two or three times a week. 58% of y'all are just lurking and not subscribed. We'd appreciate a subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything. Like Trent was saying, nobody can see it. Your friends won't make fun of you for being subscribed to the Ones Ready podcast. And you could probably deny it. Because if you have like an anonymous username, which everybody does on the internet now, I don't even know it's you anyway.
Yeah. I'm sure the Aaron Love Hate Club subscribed because they don't want to miss anything. They don't want to miss any opportunities.
If they didn't, that would be the biggest big time move.
If they're not subscribed, like they spend a lot of time searching Ones Ready on YouTube.
I'll tell you what, I'm here for it. You know what? Because I can see how many people find us via YouTube and via other pages as well. But Trent, you and I were talking on the group chat last night as we do every single day, literally every single day of our lives. We talk to each other. That is not a bad thing for me. Probably is for you. Understandable. We were talking about something and you were like, hey, we should hop on tomorrow and we should record an episode on this topic because I think it's valuable. I'll turn it over to you.
Well, I mean, it just occurred to me like what we're doing here is we're trying to put information out for people that are thinking about joining, right? Like that's like our base, what we're doing. We do a lot of other things. We're the official unofficial podcast of the Air Force. And you got me thinking, you know, like I'm on the internet. I see the memes. I see all the thrash. I you know, I'm aware of the geopolitical greater news sphere. I try not to pay too much attention, but it's hard to ignore it. And with everything going on, the question is the Air Force worth saving? You know, and it just kind of popped into my head. And I'm going to throw this back at you real quick because that's what I do. If you were 18 years old today, like, would you join the Air Force?
I can't imagine how hard it would be for me to sift through misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, the pressure of the zeitgeist. I'd have a whole peer group that have all of these other things out here. Like no time in history do you simultaneously have every piece of information that you need. And then at the exact same time, you have every single piece of crappy garbage take information that you absolutely don't need and you should be shielded from, right? Like, it used to be this thing where, you know, when we were growing up, and this is going to be a lot of us talking about, you know, the generational divide between us and our, you know, average listener. But when we were growing up, man, like, you figured those crappy things out about the military very slow increments, right? Like, yeah. Nobody, your recruiter didn't tell you, hey, when you in process at BMT, you're going to be part of this rainbow flight. You're not even going to, you're going to be wearing different clothes. You're going to get this stupid haircut. But even then, like, the process really isn't that ironed out. So you might get clothes in like a couple days. You might have a uniform, or it might be like 3 days and you'll just be like walking around in the same pair of jeans you had on when you shipped out. But you got that in a slow drip, right? And then you got like the chance to like bitch about it with your friends and sit in that and things and be like, oh man, this other flight, they got theirs in like a day. Like, their drill instructor had them ready to go a day after they got there. But if you use that and you extrapolate it over an entire career, right? You know, when you get to airborne school, you know, if it wasn't for us telling people this, like, that's like a kind of like a down low sort of thing. It's like, you're going to get there and you're going to show up 6 hours early and you're going to stand on some wires and throw rocks at helmets. Right.
Yep.
We didn't know that till we got to airborne school. I didn't know that was a thing until I showed up at airborne school. And I was like, what are we doing? And they're like, oh, no, that's how the Army does it, dude. You got to show up, you know, 45 minutes early for your team leader, 45 minutes early for your platoon leader, 10 minutes early for him to make sure that you're here. And you're like, but that's 3 hours early. What are we doing?
Well, the processing speeds, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. And they were like, you know, well, no, that's just how it is. You know, you didn't know that back in the day. And now that piece of information is readily available, and some 17-year-old high school senior is making fun of that the same way that we are. And we're like, hold on, you haven't even decided to get in yet. And you're telling me that you don't want to, you know, we make the joke with folks that are like, I don't know if I want to be, you know, in the CIA or if I want to be a surgeon. I'm thinking about getting in. I'm just going to do PJ for like one enlistment, and then I'm going to go over and I'm going to, you know, I'll work at one of the tier one units. And then once I'm ready to go, I want to go work at Ground Branch. And you're like,
I would never work with this tier one unit because I hear that they're garbage. Right.
But that's the byproduct of kind of what it is that we're talking about, right? And it's hard for us, you know, it's hard to get to the kernel of the question, which is, you know, what's real, what isn't, and is this thing worth saving? And more importantly, is this thing worth devoting your entire life to? Because that really is the question that I don't want to poo-poo here is, you know, you may only be 17 or 18 years old. We say it all the time. Like, of course, I have nothing against anybody that does one enlistment and gets out. There's a ton of people that I've known that, no kidding, got in. It took them 2 years to be a PJ. They served four more years because they had a six-year contract. And they were like, okay, tight, I did that. I'm going to move on with my life. I have no animosity towards them.
I do.
We'll talk about that in a second. I don't have any animosity towards them, or, you know, the people, you know, the classic 10-year mark, right? When people are getting ready to enlist for that third time, you know, they've got two enlistments under their belt and they start looking and they're like, listen, I don't want to spend another 10 years doing this. I want to move on and I want to do something differently. I don't have any problem with those folks, but we're always looking for those people that want to, no kidding, make a career out of it, go for 20 plus, and they want to do the job. And they want to do the job in the way that, you know, we think is the right way, or, you know, we agree upon is the right way, and it upholds the cultures and the values that we think are important to this thing. We want those folks. So there is a gravitas, if you will, to that joining. They of course, they want the most information, but it goes off the rails so quickly. You look at every single Reddit board, and it is a dumpster fire of, you know, sometimes good things, sometimes bad things. Sometimes people are right in what they're saying, and just because of the way the culture is, those people get made fun of for being correct.
Right. Like,
they'll say something that's completely factually correct, and just because of the way that the culture is, they're like, oh, look at this effing dork. And then that dude gets flamed for saying the right thing. It's wild.
Yeah, the internet is one of my favorite things because it appeals to like my base character traits of like sarcasm and like narcissism, you know?
Sure, right.
But it's not the best way to ingest like information always, right? Like, you talk about that slow drip of negativity, and we blame a lot of things on the algorithm, right? Because it trends towards the negative more often than not. And you can't really blame that. That's human nature, trends towards the negative. And so because we got that slow drip of negativity, like, I knew people that had been in the military before me, but they didn't tell me everything. You know, right. Like, and how do you explain it? Like, how do you explain that it's the best possible experience of your life with all these negative things? You know, like, because the negative things stand out, and they know it stands out. It's like trying to explain to someone what it's like having a kid, right? It's like, yeah, it sucks, but it's also the best thing in the world. Like, how can both of those things be true at the same time? And I think that's, you know, that's one of the struggles that we have with this podcast, right? It'd be more fun to come on here and do an Aaron and Trent show and just burn it to the ground. And all we do is talk about everything that's wrong and yada, yada, yada. And the whole thing about saving, is the Air Force worth saving? And would I join today? That the question that was in my head, it's, I think I'd have to start with, is it really that much different than it was? You know, I joined in 03, you know, like 2003. And if y'all think that, you know, American society just barely found out that people lie to us, like, I'm sorry that you didn't understand that in 2003, if you're my age, but some of us were very well aware. And I joined anyway. And so I don't think it's really that much different, in some ways, but in some ways it is. And it's impossible to like answer that question for myself. Like, hey, would I still join today? Given the breadth of information, the depth of information, and the kind of information that is being thrown my way.
That's a really interesting thing to explore, what you just brought up. Is the generation now, because of the information that they have, they assume that we also didn't have, maybe to a lesser degree because we didn't have the internet and social media, they believe that we were naive in our pursuits to get into the military. And they believe that we are just like, oh yeah, no, the government is totally here to help us, and they've never done anything like the Gulf of Tonkin, and you know, they don't have their own problems like the Iran like I was a young child, but we grew up through Oliver North and the Iran-Contra trials and all of those things. And we grew up through all of these things that we were like, hey, wait a second. You know, we're not that different. It's just that this generation, or the, you know, Gen Z, the, you know, the really 13 to, it's probably 13 to kind of like 25-year-old demographic right now, just assumes that they're just like, oh, you guys were idiots. You're totally naive. You didn't know all of these things were happening and all this other stuff. And that's where, especially with you and I find that comical, just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Just because the medium was different doesn't mean that people didn't consume information. You know, like I had a paper route, and yeah, so that news was what, 8-12 years old, but there was almost every house that I went to in my neighborhood had to, you know, pedal up their driveway, throw it on the front porch because people are lazy or whatever. I'm not upset about it still. Those good character building moments for me.
Sure.
But like, you had the radio, you had everything. Like, I don't understand why. I can see where it'd be easy to assume that based on the medium, but people have always, this is the way it's always been, you know, like Benjamin Franklin, right? Writing under pseudonyms, Thomas Paine, all these people that were at the very beginning of our country. Like, this is the distrust of power, people doing shady things. Like, it's always been out there, and the misinformation has always been there as well. Like, we want to think that like there's like the political class or whatever, these people way back in the day, just because they wore funny hats and they wrote with like a you know, a feather and ink, that somehow they were different humans. Go back and read the newspapers and the mudslinging politically from back then. Like, it was at least as bad as it is now. So, you know, really long story and convoluted way to say, like, people have always been the same. We had the same probably misgivings that y'all have. It's just, you know, the newspapers that I read, the media that I consumed was not tilted in the same way that, you know, Reddit forums are. You know, like, if I read, you know, autobiographies and all those other things, the Colin Powell books when I was a kid, and all these other things, like, it was all mostly positive when it came to the military. You know, obviously, Vietnam, I read a lot of that stuff and the terrible experiences that those guys went through. But I'm not hearing about how, like, exactly what's going to happen on day 3 of BMT. You know, like, I'm not going to hear exactly what's going to happen. And all this stuff, though, it is filtered. It is filtered for the negative because of the human nature algorithm that exists. And so, like, how do you get through that and see what the reality is, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. And it brings up a larger point too. When you talk to the people that have been in the military, and you and I were kind of talking about it earlier, you had those dudes that were old and that were salty and that had plenty of time in, and, you know, all of my uncles were in the military. I had plenty of people that were around. They never talked about the bad times. They never aggrandized it or lionized it or put it in like the most glowing terms either, because they did serve through Vietnam. You know, my dad was the youngest of a family of 8 people. Five of his older brothers were all in the military. My dad was at the very end of Vietnam, which means all of his older brothers had tours in Vietnam. So, you know, they didn't talk about it in glowing terms, and they definitely would allude to every once in a while when I was a kid. You know, like looking back on it now, it's easier to put two and two together, what they were talking, what they were intimating, but their, you know, reception when they got back from Vietnam and all of that other stuff. The difference is, and I liken it to a woman, you know, during childbirth, like a woman that has a hard pregnancy and a hard childbirth, you would assume that they never want to have another kid ever again. But we all know women, you know, personally close in our lives. It's like a month passes. They're like, well, I mean, it wasn't that bad. And then your body actually puts off a chemical that makes you forget the worst parts of it. And like 6 months out, that's when you see like a lady, even with a hard birth or a hard pregnancy, they're like happy with their kid and whatever else. And a year later, they're like, I don't know, I kind of might want to have another baby. And then that's when the start, you know, when it happens too. But never before in the history of the world, right, in that 13 to kind of 25 year demographic, it goes in waves, right? You get in and you're really idealistic and you're really excited about being in the military and you really connect with something that you feel is larger than yourself. And when you graduate basic training, regardless of what you think about the different services, basic trainings, and I've obviously only graduated the Air Force's basic training, but when you graduate, you feel good. You feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself. You feel like you're doing that service. And then there's inevitably those hard times that follow, right? That E2 to, you know, E6, E7 timeframe, whatever that is, that 10-year period, there are times where you're just absolutely disrespected as a person. You're sweeping a floor in the middle of a dust storm that doesn't need swept. You're like, what are we even doing here? Like, you're waiting in lines or people are not willing to you know, help you after hours because their shop is closed for training 17 hours a week. You know, yep. You go over just to get your pay fixed and they're like, sorry, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Friday mornings we're closed because we're doing training and their training is playing kickball over on whatever field they're doing, whatever.
You're like, I work 12s nights. Yeah. Like, yeah. This is the only time that I can be right here this month. They're like, psh.
And by later. The way, I'm cutting into my sleep. Yeah. Like I work 12s, which means I'm there a half an hour early and I'm there at least an hour late. So really it's working a 14. And now you're cutting in to my other 10 hours, which is sleep and eating and maybe, I don't know, having a life outside of this job. But never before have we had access to that middle part. You know, every once in a while, somebody who was super disgruntled would get out as like an E6 and they would just talk mad crap about it, right? Like they'd be so disillusioned and so mad about it that whatever. That's why people, you know, I am number one hate club for, you know, E9s and commanders and stuff that'll happy talk things to death, you know, and I make fun of people for playing both sides of the fence all the time on it. But, because really at that point, like, as I look back over my career, and I'm sure you do the same thing, of course there were terrible times, but now at this point with a little bit of distance, I remember the fun times and I remember the good people that I met. I remember the good things that I was able to do. And hopefully I made a positive impact. You know, I hope I'm net positive in my career for people that I've impacted, missions that I've had, or, you know, things that I've done. I hope that I'm net positive and I, you know, like that's important to me. But never before have the people that are out had access to those people in that middle, very low range. Right. And that's where every single anonymous mill meme, Redditor, people that are bitching, even people that are poking fun in a good way. Like, I love Mandatory Fun Day. I love Justin Danger Nunley. You know, I love Mil-Spec Believer. All those guys are doing good things. Like, I think those guys are net positive. But even then, they don't understand that when they bitch about something, people that have no context, they just look at that and then they put it in this catalog of like, oh, everybody in the Army is dumb and everybody in the Marines eats crayons and everything is a false flag and everything is bull crap and sexual assault and extremism is just rampant. We got a DM today that somebody was like, do you guys want to talk about extremism, you know, and white nationalism in the Air Force? I'm like, bro, I've never been on a team one time with anybody that has been a white nationalist and been like,
that's a good way to get your ass kicked. Is that
right? Like, we're like, I just don't. It was such a dumbfounding question. I'm like, what do you want me to say about it? Like, I don't have any personal experience with that. And again, like, not to be hyperbolic, but that word extremism, you know, Gadsden flags, when this whole extremism thing was kicking out, what was that, 2020 or 2021?
It's all a blur.
That ever since Harambe died, 2016 is the last clear memory I've had. It's all been downhill since then. We lost our minds a little bit. The pendulum swung way too far And, you know, having a flag that says, don't tread on me, somebody's like, ah, you got to take that down. It's an extremist symbol. And you're like, hold on. I mean, in the sense that America was built from insurgent terrorists that overthrew their government and made one of their own. Sure, I guess. But that's not what we're talking about in the context of the word or definition or anything.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, speaking of like individuals and the basis of individuality and all those other things, I think for the folks that are just like perusing, you know, the meme pages and the internet out there, like we talk about like how a lot of these guys, like Mil-Spec Believer, bro, is probably not that disillusioned, right? Like he's having a good time. It's fun to make fun of things. But as an outsider, how do I determine a truly disillusioned person versus, you know, we know people that have gotten out after 20 years that like to hop on social media and talk about all the things that are wrong, but they're doing it because they care, right? Like sure. They see things that maybe are going down the incorrect path from their perspective. And a lot of times I think they're right about a lot of things, but how do you differentiate between that person and the E3 who doesn't know anything? And it's okay to complain. I'm not saying it's a necessarily bad thing, but how do you differentiate between, you know, the real complaining with, you know, merit, experience and information behind it versus, you know, just that E3 hopping onto, you know, Twitter, X, TikTok or whatever, and just venting about things that, you know, they're possessing what, 6% of the information about what's right. What's going on around them.
Yeah. Or they're parroting it. You know, number one, I'd say consider your source, I guess, you know, looking at who it is that's actually saying it. Like, do they have the experience necessary? Can you verify that they are who they say they are? Can you understand that they may have a good take? Like, have they made good takes in the past? Like, as a utilitarian or in a utilitarian sense to figure out what information is true and what information isn't, man, no clue. Cause I'm still trying to figure that out. I try to figure that out on a daily. I see a news source and I'm like, okay, well, now I got to try to verify this through 9 different sources and try to corroborate some of the information. And when it doesn't match up, it may not mean, you know, that it's true. Just look at the most recent thing that happened at the Canadian border with the car. Like the car that raced towards the Canadian border, it took two seconds for that to be. It started off as it was a terrorist attack.
Yep.
And then it was a terrorist attack by Hamas. And then mm-hmm. It was a terrorist attack by Iranian-backed people that were in and out. And then, like, we couldn't figure out which way it was going. Was it going into America? Was it leaving America? Was it Canadian terrorists? Was it American terrorists?
A picture of a passport at one point. That was super exciting.
Gee, you're just like, oh, man, these. I'll tell you, whatever they're making passports out of, they're indestructible. Because we found all of them in 9/11, and then we found this one completely pristine as well. It's crazy.
The year 2000 is when we made big leaps in passport technology.
Big leaps in passport technology, nearly indestructible. Absolutely. But then that ended up being, it was just a guy in his Bentley with his wife that sped towards the border, lost control of his car, and it blew up. It was not a malicious attack. And the most frustrating,
right?
What's that?
Rich people.
Yeah, that was a problem. Well, and then the most frustrating thing about it is the news cycle is so fast now that a lie or a miscalculation or misinformation or disinformation or malinformation, it goes around the world twice before the truth has even left the station. So you don't even know, like by the time that you get to home base, which is, oh no, this was a car accident. It wasn't an attack. It was just a car accident. The lie has already been out there and people have already formed opinions based off that incorrect information. So I guess the only thing that I can say is number one, you just wait. Anything that you see, any news story that comes out, you are never going to be wrong by just waiting. And I've been wrong on this before. Like I've been the person that didn't wait, that wanted to address something that got out there. So I'm speaking from experience, not from me just guessing. Just wait. Give it 72 hours and see how the story evolves because it's going to change.
Yeah, but I ended up without toilet paper because I waited one time. What about that, Aaron? Because I'm not prone to panic, you know?
Such a wild time. Do you know how much time I spent with a bleach, like overly bleached out water, wiping off doorknobs and high touch places in a unit at the DOD because we thought that COVID could live on surfaces? That has never happened in the history of the planet. Somebody's going to hit me in the comments for saying in the history of the planet. Listen, COVID didn't live on services. Everybody that was wiping off their bananas before they peeled them and eat them, I think you might have been incorrect. And I think in hindsight, we can look back and go, yeah, it probably wasn't a thing.
It's cool how Amazon figured out how to not let it live on their surfaces, though. So
totally fine.
That's totally cool.
Yeah, but like, totally crazy.
The toilet paper thing is a good example, I think, of how something fairly ridiculous gains traction. And once it gets picked up, once it has momentum, like some of these narratives, some of these stories, some of these things which can become very real things, like us not having toilet paper, which had nothing to do with COVID, by the way. I don't know why we ran out of toilet. I still don't know why we ran out of toilet paper. Like it takes a very small percentage of people to just buy all the toilet paper they can, and then all of a sudden it's just disappears. It was wild.
Right. I think was it the lockdown? Was people didn't want to be stranded without toilet paper, so they were buying, like, because they didn't know they were going to be in lockdown for 2 weeks. You're not going through a roll of toilet paper a day by yourself. People were buying just tons of toilet paper.
Well, I mean, if you leave McDonald's open because they're essential, you might be.
Taco Bell. Don't even get me started on what places were essential and what places weren't. Because I'll tell you what, that didn't make any sense to me, but I don't know.
But you'll see like one thing that hits, right? Like there's a lot of these like mill influences out there. And like we said, I like a lot of these folks. There are some maybe in Marine uniforms, which I'm not sure why you're in uniform, that I absolutely cannot stand.
I don't know either.
The green screen in uniform thing. Ugh.
Like, yeah.
Well, it's Kagan Dunlap. I don't like you.
Unnecessary strays.
I mean, he's probably a nice guy. I just cannot stand his content. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like if something gains momentum and like people see it, like this is the influencer game, right? Like somebody puts one thing out, it gets hits, it gets views, it gets momentum. Like everybody jumps on the same bandwagon. So just because you see the momentum of a storyline, of a point of view, doesn't mean that that's the reality of the entire situation. Like that's all of social media. You know, like when I was growing up, I was always told like 3% of the population makes a difference between us going left or right as a country, right? It's not that many people screaming about things, but those are the people, like those are the people steering the direction of the conversations and the narratives into certain places. And then what do we pick up? Right. Like, and I keep talking about this, the algorithm of the natural human is negativity. And so I'm not saying that there's not problems. I'm not saying that there's not problems within the Air Force. I'm not saying that joining today is a good or a bad idea based on your personal beliefs. I'm just saying it's probably a little more nuanced than we'd like to think it is.
Well, it's going to be good and it's going to be bad because, you know, just like there are some bad things that are going on that we don't talk about out in public circles a whole lot. And those don't get the attention that they should. Right. But the same can be said for a whole lot of good things. There's a whole lot of awesome things that people. And by the way, there's a middle ground as well. I don't know how many friends I've had that have gotten in, gotten out, went on and did something else. And they're literally just like, yeah, I mean, it was a chapter. Like, it wasn't super intense. It wasn't super bad. It wasn't good in whatever either. And it was just a thing that I did and went. Like, there is a whole range of experiences that you're going to have in the military and in the Air Force specifically. And, you know, the good stuff very rarely gets put out there because in the zeitgeist and in the culture that it is, the good stuff is just as open to getting made fun of. Like people can do things for completely altruistic and genuine purposes. They can just do nice stuff, right? Somebody's going to make fun of that person. And usually somebody making fun of that person is pretty funny. And then it's just as bad. Like, you know, it becomes cringe to do these things, whatever else. Yeah. And that perpetuates an entire cycle of people not telling you about the good stuff and yada, yada, yada. But there's going to be a huge range of stuff all the way from, you know, some people are completely justified in saying joining the Air Force, it was a terrible decision. I shouldn't have done it. It was a bad organization for me to be in. Hey, man, you might be completely right. On the other side of the coin or at the other end of the spectrum, there are people that are like, it changed my life. I love it. I wear my Air Force retired hat and I tell people about the Air Force every chance I get. And yeah, some stuff was bad, but it was like, can't be bad. You know, we made fun of it and we laughed about it. We're like, oh, it rained today. You know, oh, life sucks. You know, but there's going to be a whole range of stuff in between there. And it's not to take away from either side of that spectrum. I don't want to take away, you know, the validity of some people that had horrible experiences inside the Air Force or, you know, even worse, lost their life. We have friends that are no longer alive, which I think is the worst possible scenario for, you know, joining the Air Force. And I have friends that it is legitimately all they talk about. It is no kidding when we talk and, you know, when I make those connections with those folks that have now retired, you know, they're like, man, it must be awesome. I miss it so much. I can't believe that you're still in. And, you know, if there's one thing that I miss, it's being in the Air Force. And even I'm like, you wish you were still in? Are you okay, buddy? Is everything going okay with you?
We're in a weird situation too, because we're both jumping ship right now. We're both getting out.
Very, very close.
And it's difficult for me right now to like talk positive about stuff all the time, because right. I'm not allowed to like come on here. I'm allowed, but like I'm so excited to get out. Like yep. super excited. But I've done 20 years, you know, and you've done like 80 years or whatever. I don't know.
I always laugh when people forget that I'm the oldest guy on the podcast. People are like, oh, Peaches, even though he's the oldest one. No, I'm older than Peaches. I think I'm a year older than Peaches. He just got in when he was 17 and I didn't get in until I was 21. So
he just looks like the little guy from Up. That's why he's yeah. like little and
little guy from Up. Oh, I'm putting that on this thumbnail. I'm superimposing his face onto the guy from Up. It is hard. And you're right. It is hard to talk in glowing terms about everything, right? But I'll tell you what, just like that pregnant lady, give me about 5 years. Give me some space, you know, where I don't have the, you know, the community, good, bad, or indifferent around, where, you know, I cannot wait. It's going to happen in the very near future too. There's going to be a meme and it's going to reference something that everybody inherently understands in the Air Force. And I'm going to text you and I'm going to be like, what are they talking about? Yep. And you're going to be like, dude, I don't know. And we're going to have to ask somebody and be like, hey, what is this about? And they're going to explain it. And we're going to go, oh, huh. Like I watched it with, there was a, I don't even care to talk about the actual problem, but there was like, you know how memes go in like, they're like a 2 week timeline, right? Like everybody is using the same meme for about 2 weeks and then it drops off. Well, there was a specific topic and, you know, people were getting hammered over this one specific topic. And this one older PJ is like, what is going on right now? And I literally messaged him and I was like, hey, here's the context. Here's why they're getting made fun of. Here's the actual thing that was an issue. And he was like, bro, I don't even know what's going on right now. And I just laughed. I was like, man, I can't wait for that to be me, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, And you know, the end of your career is not the same as the rest of your career, right? Like,
right.
It's a little different. You got to stay at a squadron for a long, long time. I went up to staff. I'm not built for staff. I'm not saying it wasn't a good, positive experience overall, but you know, like when it's time to go, it's time to go, you know, like,
right.
I think I said I have negative feelings about the people that get out like at, you know, 6 or 10 years. A lot of that might be jealousy, or I think they're smarter than I am, because they could go out in the real world and make it before I could. But it doesn't take away from like all the good experiences I had, you know, but like I don't know how to talk about the negative very well. You know what I mean? Like if I was looking at things today, it would be, you know, like, and here's another thing that I always think about is Jared, when we were on the podcast, was like, the Air Force isn't a fallback. The military isn't a fallback option. And I'm like, the Air Force was like my last option, you know?
Oh, same. Yeah.
Like, so like if you're in a bad spot and you don't have like an extensive criminal record and, you know, you can pass a drug test and you can pass the ASVAB, like it's 4 years of maybe not all the best experiences. And the first 4 years, honestly, are probably going to be the worst because you have like no authority and all this other stuff. And then at the end, you have like all the authority. And that's what makes it awful is people can't relate to you when you're expected to make these decisions and and toe the party line for the guy above you. And then everybody's just humans at that point too. And like rank is meaningless and, you know, all these other things that go into that. It's not a bad option, you know, like if you can get past all the other things. And I just don't think it's that much different than, you know, you can get a job at Amazon where they're going to work you to death without the benefits, without the camaraderie that you're going to, you know, gain here. Granted, apparently if you work at Walmart, you know, for 10 years, you sign off and because it was just that emotional experience. So like maybe Walmart is the place to go.
Gail Davis, shout out. That's
American hero.
Yeah, got it. Gail Davis signing off for the night. And I will say, you know, it wasn't a fallback, you know, for me. It wasn't, you know, but I was definitely running pretty low on options, man. I tried the college thing and it didn't work. I tried to get out into the workforce and figured out that also did not work. You know, September 11th, unfortunately, presented itself and it gave me a time where I could get in and try to serve and be something bigger than myself. But I'll tell you what, like good, bad, or indifferent, the Air Force and Pararescue have made me who I am. You know, to steal, you know, Chief Ivan Ruiz's line, you know, Pararescue made me, Pararescue formed me. It took me a long time to figure out what that was supposed to look like and how I was supposed to do it the right way. And some would argue I never did figure that out. And I accept that, but it like there was really, it got to a point where, you know, getting, I didn't have all the information to kind of like pull the thread on what this episode was supposed to be about, which we never do a good job on. I didn't have all the information. I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew that what I was doing wasn't working. So it wasn't necessarily a fallback, but sometimes you just have to accept, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, I came, you know, you and I came from a place of zero information, or at least lacking information, and people sugarcoating stuff for us. Well, now people are coming from the exact opposite, the other end of the spectrum, where they're saying, well, here's literally all of the information, the good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, the behind closed doors, the stuff that you're never supposed to be privy to, the stuff that I didn't know what was going on in, you know, closed door conversations with commanders and chiefs before. That was never a thing. And now somebody gets wind of that and it's out on social media that day. You know, some E9 does something somewhere that's unpopular. That stuff rockets around the internet. A one-off comment by somebody in a position of authority that was said at a staff meeting where there were not supposed to be cell phones, and the person can't wait to run out and get that to somebody to get it out on social media. That never happened with us before. I had no clue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, there's a lot of things I picked up later on in my career about, you know, certain commanders protecting me, certain people, you know, trying to throw me under the bus when I was like a staff sergeant. But like, those were like the best of times, right? Cause I was just blissfully ignorant and just doing my job. You know, like, I was never home. I was doing my job. And you know, like, I want to go into a little bit, like, the differences between, like, why I ended up staying in 20, you know, like, I think that's a good place to start for people that are looking at this. And for me, it's just like a personality thing, right? Like, I don't think I've ever said to anybody, like, I'm an airman. Like, I never lost who I am. Like, there's a lot of these perceptions or whatever. And good on people that are like that, right? Like, some people, it becomes their entire, I don't want to, you know, talk too much smack about them, but it becomes our entire identity. Like, if you get into this community, and I never considered SOUT or SR my entire, you know, thing either, but like, individuality is, you know, looked upon as like a good thing. Like, I'm still just Trent. I've always been Trent. And so, like, I get it for some people where it's not like their thing or whatever, but like, there's a lot of good things. Like, I was able to problem solve individually. I was able to go out there and do things on my own. Like, after those first few years, like, very few times have people ordered me to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, no one's being like, go do this or you're going to jail. Like, it hasn't been like that at all. So, like, on the list of positive things, as far as being valued as an individual, being able to do my own thing, like, those are the things that really kept me around for the last 20 years.
Well, because you're all working towards that common goal, right? Like, people have this idea where, you know, they're going to, and again, unfortunately, COVID sort of screwed this one up because it kind of did show a little crack in what I'm about to say. But, you know, very rarely does your chain of command look at you and go, do this or I'm going to punish you.
Yeah.
It's usually like, hey, we know that we have to do this in order to get to mission success. And you're the one that has to do it for me. And you're like, all right, yep, got it. You know, you don't need, I love how you're honing in on the kind of individualism of it too. Marcus Luttrell very famously said that being a Navy SEAL wasn't just what he did, but it's who he was. And I've come full circle on that comment in my career. Well, I guess 180 on the comment, because full circle would be back where you started. But when I heard that, I was like, F yeah, man, being a PJ, that's not just a job. That's who I am. Well, now as I get to the end of my career and I'm getting ready to put that beret down and I'm getting ready to go do different stuff, if that was true, my life would be over. If that was true, I would no longer exist. I would be lost, because there's no being a civilian PJ. You know, I guess I could go contract in Africa and do PR and you know, fly and try to hold on to that as long as I possibly could, although I wouldn't get hired. I don't think that it's who I am. I think it's something that I did. I think that it formed me. I think that it made me. I think it's an important part of my life. And to get all cringy, you know, it's an important part of my story, and it's something that I'll talk about maybe sparingly at some point, but it won't be because of the job. It won't be because of, you know, who I think I was or any accolades that I may or may not have gotten or any missions that I may or may not be proud of. It's because of the people that I got to serve with, the mission that we got to accomplish, and the things that we got to do together. To see when you have those lightning in a bottle moments, like two or three, you know, times in my life, you know, looking at, you know, Vegas or Kirtland or, you know, the 321st or some of these other places that I've worked, and go, man, we did it right. You know, for this time period, we had the right people. We were doing the right thing. We were doing it the right way. And we were able to do something that truly was bigger than our combined parts. You know, it wasn't 1 + 1 = 2. It was 1 + 1 = 3. Because we were able to do something that alone we couldn't have done. And without the right group of people, we wouldn't have been able to done it. And that works the opposite way. I've also been at units where you're like, nobody here was doing the things the right way. This was just hell on earth every single day of every single minute. And we could never figure it out. And every day took effort. It's like being in a relationship. And I always say, if you're in a relationship that's, you know, a loving relationship, it shouldn't feel like work all the time. You should work for it, but it shouldn't feel like a job. That's a pretty bad sign. And I've worked at places where it definitely felt like a job, but you know, all that to say, these jobs don't have to define you. You can get in and you can be any number of personality. That's why the dumb question that we always get, and it is a dumb question. Oh, well, I'm not exactly like an alpha type dude. I don't really like to, you know, lift weights and slam stuff and scream. I just want to do it to save people. Can I still be a PJ? I'm like, yeah, of course you can. Can you do the job? Can you meet the standard? Can you perform how we need you to perform? Can you be not a total cringe fest in the team room and make everybody hate you?
No, you need to be a total alpha. If you need to be out in front
Sigma
all the time,
male.
No socially awkward people that have weird nerd tendencies are ever going to make it.
Exactly.
I want to dig into something. What does it mean the right way? Because we talked about this a little bit on the text last night, and there was a situation I was in recently. I'll start. Sorry, I was in a situation the other day, and someone was talking about like some orders or a request that they'd gotten from another organization, and they're like, "Well, I have to do this because they asked me for it," and I'm like, "Well, the situation has changed. Like, you are no longer you're no longer the person that should be providing this information." They're like, "Well, I have to do it anyway because they told me to." I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying to me right now. I cannot wrap my brain around just because someone that, you know, is an echelon above you that doesn't even outrank you told you that they need this information from you, that you're just going to like jump through your own butthole to like do it. Like, I don't understand that. So like, to me, like the right way, like that means a lot of different things.
Right. I think in any good organization, there's professional tension, and that professional tension goes up and down. There is a push and there is a pull. People have a mistaken, you know, a misconception about the military that, you know, if somebody outranks you, they could just tell you what to do and you have to go do it. Well, you know, if it's legal, if it's ethical, if it's moral, if it's smart, if it's not dangerous, if it manages risk, there is a lot of qualifications for what an order has to be, right? There's a misconception that if somebody outranks you and they tell you you have to go do something, you just have to say, yes, sir, or ma'am, and you go and do it. No, you do not. And as a matter of fact, I would argue, especially as an NCO or as a senior NCO, it's your job to resist. It's your job to make them justify what it is that they're doing. It's your job to make them live up to the authority which they have been granted. That is your job, to be an individual, to be a problem solver on your own, of your own accord, with your own thoughts and your own experiences. And sometimes your job is to say no. Sometimes your job, and I relish this as a senior NCO because it is who I am as a person, I relish those opportunities where I can look at somebody that outranks me or an officer or somebody that is telling me to do something and go, listen, I understand your intent here, but that is not the way to do it. And we're not going to do it like that. To answer your question, like what's the right way to do things? I think there's a couple different better words that we can use. Like there's right, there's righteous, and then there's correct. You know, you can do things for the righteous reasons because you think that morally, ethically, that's righteous. It's righteous for me to act in a certain way, right? When we do things, typically when I'm saying, you know, doing things the right way, I'm using it from the sports term, right? Like the team that does things the right way, you know, we block, we tackle, we do these basic things, we do them. But that's really, when I say right, I mean correct. That's the correct way to do things. And we would all agree. And you can apply this to anything. You know, we can have a conversation about, you know, the correct way to have an admin day. Okay, well, you take out your own trash at the end of the day. You do things as best you possibly can. You're open, you're honest, you're transparent with your processes and making sure that you're doing the level best throughout whatever it is that you're supposed to do through your job and your task. And at the end of the day, when you leave, you turn the lights off. That's the right way to do things, right? There's a million ways we can get the job done. Some of them aren't the right way. And we've all like, and every time that I bring this up, I think of like GPC requests, things that we've spent money on. Totally legit. Even if it's something like, man, sometimes the best piece of, there's a thing everybody buckle up for a contracting cook. So when we spend money in the military, there's a whole bunch of rules and regulations, but nobody knows the full set of rules and regulations because they're ridiculous and they're copious. They're huge. There may be a rule that you've never heard of. You could, for no fault of your own, you could run afoul of a contracting office somewhere because you didn't know that you needed an SF-182 to do this job because it was training and not off-the-shelf goods and services, even though you're paying for a coach to teach you things that you can't actually buy that actually qualify as a contract and not an SF-182, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the one listener that's still listening in the military right now, you're going to recognize a lot of those terms. The bottom line here is the best piece of gear that you need for your men might not be what they call Barry compliant, so you can't buy it. It's illegal for you to buy it, but you still know that it's the best case, that it's the best piece of gear, and it's going to mean the difference between freezing and not freezing on a mountain.
Yep.
So now the question is like, okay, well, are you going to do the correct thing? The correct thing is not to buy the gear. Are you going to do the righteous thing, which is, I don't know, maybe I bend the rules a little bit. Maybe I don't take any money.
A little gray area.
Living here. Or am I going to do the right thing? And the right thing would probably be to go to the commander and go, hey, sir, hey, ma'am, there's this piece of gear. It's not Barry compliant. It's going to cost us more to go to this other company, but I'm going to need you to give me more money for that. That's probably the right way to do things. And there's a whole bunch of gray area in all of this stuff that we're talking about.
Do you know what I love about this community is, at least from my perspective, we're always fighting somebody.
Always.
We're either fighting the people in our chain of command that are either below us or above us.
Yep.
Or the fighting the greater Air Force, DOD, SOCOM, regs, and all those other things. Like
fighting the man.
Actively fight the man all the time. Or we have someone that needs to be shot in front of us. Like
we fight each other. Yeah.
We also fight each other like crazy.
God forbid you figure out all those other processes, because then your only enemy is in the team room with you.
If you have a competitive itch and you like problem solving, like, this is the place for you, because there is always someone to fight with.
There's always somebody that doesn't. I remember we tried to get a boat at Kirtland, because we do water ops at Kirtland, right? So we had to buy this new boat, and it had to have bigger engines, and it had to have special stuff on it. Of course, it cost, I can't even remember what it cost. Imagine what you think a boat should cost. Add 200% because it's the government, and that's what this boat was supposed to cost, right? It's like
had special screws in it. See, like, yeah,
who knows, man? I was, of course, this landed on my desk is like to push it through, and I'll never forget the very first conversation we had. So we had to send everything down to San Antonio for approval. And the first 06 that looked at this didn't even like look through the packet. It was just like, boat. New Mexico has the least amount of water in the United States, denied. And like, that was his reasoning. And then I had to go back to this full bird colonel and I have to go, hey, sir. So this boat's going to be used in Florida. This boat is going to be used in Lake Havasu. We're going to take this boat out to the West Coast to do jump operations and, you know, all this other stuff. And he was like, oh yeah, okay. And then he proceeded to deny this boat like 8 more times, like for whatever reason. He looked at me like, no, that's way over budget. Like, it's not your budget. It's coming out of a different pot of money. Like, we already went through this. And he got me a couple times. Like, he said no for reasons and I'd have to change. I'd have to be like, oh crap, I got to make it compliant for this reason, or I have to make it compliant for this reason. But in the end, we ended up getting the boat, and it was collaborative. I'm not saying that I won that in any sense. I'm saying it was a collaborative thing where he ended up finally going, oh, you need this for this specific purpose, and this does get after the mission that it was meant to get after. Okay, cool. Let's work together and we'll get that one.
You can tell the truth. One day he woke up and he was like, you know what you guys need is a boat. How come you guys aren't getting a boat?
Like, thank you, sir.
You guys are doing this training out here. Where's the boat at?
Thank you, Colonel. Yeah, we had him out. He's in the Zodiac getting seasick. It's like, well, you know what you guys need? You need a bigger boat.
That's a fantastic idea, sir.
Hey, thanks. Hey, Colonel, can I got an email I'm going to send you. I think you're going to find it very interesting.
Where would we be? We'd be lost without you, boss.
But I think when, and again, desperately trying to keep us on what we're talking about here is, you know, of course there are going to be those interactions that you have with people that don't get it. You know, I spent my entire young career working for helicopter pilots that didn't understand why we need to go to shooting schools once a quarter, why we need to go to these, you know, free fall courses when they're like, bro, you never have jump missions. Why am I going to approve my budget for you to go do this for this high dollar training? That's what I did my first two assignments. We were working for helicopter pilots.
A, when you put in the budget, this is how you justified a huge part of your budget. And now you just want the money for something else.
Yeah, I distinctly remember, you know, being a pup right down the street from an organization. They didn't even have their own building. They had a room inside of a helicopter squadron that was down by life support. And that was that was where the PJs were. And they would constantly big time. I had a really good friend of mine. I won't use his real name because he's still doing work somewhere. My friend, it got to be such a thing at every single staff meeting. The commander, who was a helicopter pilot, would go, okay, does anybody else have anything? And of course, the team sergeant would just raise his hand. And I'll call him Mike because that's a fake name that I use for everybody here. It got to such a thing is that the commander had it formalized that the last slide was questions, everybody other than Mike. And then he planned another 10 minutes to stay back and talk to Mike.
Mike about would the still problems. Be like, don't care.
He's like, nope, I got it. You're on the slides. I got it. And then the days that Mike didn't need to talk to the boss about how he was not doing what he was supposed to for his team, that became like a holiday. You're like, you got nothing? Wow.
Turn nice. The beer light on. Holy right. crap.
But of course there's going to be that friction, that professional and you're going to deal with it your whole career. And you're going to deal with it from a bunch of frustrating angles. You're going to deal with it as a guy that doesn't have enough rank to make it happen. You're going to deal with it as a guy that almost has enough rank to make a good decision. And then you're going to deal with it as a guy that has the rank to make the decision, but realizes that decision that you thought needed to be made the entire time was wrong and you can't make it.
Or sometimes you just make decisions that get chewed out anyway. I've been chewed out before. Which leads me to the I think probably the last thing that we have time to talk about is let's say you do join the military and you find yourself in like that third or fourth year and things are bad. What are you supposed to do in that situation? You know, like I guess and even just having this conversation about like the Air Force, like is the Air Force even worth saving? Like why does it seem to be the way it is? And how do you fix it?
Well, first of all, you can't fix it by quitting. Anybody that's ever said, you know, I'm going to fix it by leaving it alone and never doing anything of my own. Like, I guess you'd have to answer it. Number one, do you love this country? Do you love the Air Force? Do you have a desire to serve? If those questions are yes, yes, and yes, I don't know if you fix that by getting out. I don't know if you fix it. It would be like, boy, ANS really sucks. Well, yeah, you can fix ANS sucking by leaving it.
Fixes everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Because your other job is going to be super nice. No one's ever going to belittle you in the Air Force in another job.
Absolutely. But if you look, you know, we talked about, you know, mill influencers. You know, look at Sam Shumate. You know, you may know him as Terminal CWO. He thought things were totally bad. He thought things were beyond repair. Did he quit? Did he resign his commission and get out of the Army and not do anything? No. He was like, listen, I care about this so much that I'm going to put aside my personal desires and comforts. I'm going to put aside what makes me comfortable right now. I'm going to stay and I'm going to try to fix this thing. And he does it still to this day, to his credit. He's out there trying to expose and make things better and not doing it in a negative way. Of course, you're living your life in a negative space. Like, to the 2-6 boys that made it through the nightmare years at Cannon, nobody wanted to be there. Nobody wanted to go there. People were turning down orders and were getting out over how bad of a location they thought it was for them at that time. And man, I can't say that they were wrong in some of those decisions. Does that make ST better by not going there and making your bros that stayed in, making them take 3 more months time on the road to cover your deployments, to cover down on people that didn't want to go there? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess unless you can get out and not pay taxes, you don't really just get a say that you're not participating, right? Like we're all participants in this great experiment still. And if you are showing the passion, if you're on social media yelling at people about the military and the government and all these other things, and you're like, but I would never join because XYZ, and these are all the problems, and like I would never, you know, like commission or whatever, because it's a corrupt organization and all these things are wrong with it. It's like, okay, well then just keep giving them your money. If you think it's that bad, or what are you going to do? Move to Canada? Like all the celebrities that never actually moved to Canada, which was super, super unexpected.
I can't wait till Trump gets elected. And then we can live with like 75% less of these celebrities. There was a list going around for a while of everybody that said that they were leaving if he gets elected again. And I sincerely hope for that just because I love chaos, but I think you're right. You know, and the question, and I think that's a great place to kind of wrap it up is, you know, is the Air Force worth saving? You know, is it worth your time, your energy? Is it worth your attention and motivation and life to get in? Because you're going to have to change your entire life to get in. You know, that's not really the question. The question is, you know, do you think America is worth it? Do you think that this grand experiment that we have, do you think it's important enough for you to give a part of yourself to the military to fix? Because if that answer is no, well, then you got problems that are way bigger than what job you want to do and what service branch and all that other stuff. I think that, you know, to answer completely and clearly for me, absolutely, I think that the Air Force is worth it. Absolutely, I think America is worth it. I think, you know, I'm long on America. I don't make any bones about that. And that's, you know, the reason why I got in. And that's the reason why at the end of this career, and I'm going to put the parade out, I'm going to go do something else. It's not going to be part of who I am, you know, every day. It'll be part of my story and my history. But more importantly, I'm an American citizen, and I paid a debt to what I thought was important. And I think it's still important for people to do that today, you know, for one enlistment, two enlistments, you know, 20 years, 30 years in some cases, whatever you want to do, man, I definitely think it's worth saving. And I think, like any grown up decision, it's going to have good stuff and bad stuff that goes along with it.
Well, and I think you have to ask yourself too, if you find yourself drawn to something like this community, you have to ask yourself if you're worth it, if you're worth investing in to do the thing that you're drawn towards. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are scared to make that investment, to view themselves as worthy and capable. And you know, you're never going to know unless you try it. You can spend the rest of your life, you know, talking about it on the internet or whatever the internet turns into once we're communicating brain to brain wirelessly, yeah, and all that other stuff. Thanks, Elon.
Neuralink Web 3.0.
But, or you can just suck it up and find out what you're made of and then make the investment and see if you can make a difference.
Seems like a good place to end.
It does. This is the best Aaron and Trent show we've ever done.
The best one of all time. There's a lot of Aaron and Trenting happen in this one. Everybody, thanks for coming out. We do appreciate you. I know we were joking about it at the beginning of the podcast, but I'm not joking. Listening and you want to support, just do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. It'd be nice to see a jump in subscribers because it really does communicate to other places that we're doing a good thing. And then we'll be able to continue to get that reach out there. And maybe we'll be able to convince a whole bunch of other people that it's worth it.
Is One's Ready worth saving?
One's Ready is
worth saving. Stay tuned for the next episode where we talk.
I like it. They call that a hook in the business, my guy. You got them. Check us out over on onesready.com. We got a whole bunch of stuff. Check out the store over there. We're getting our reading list up and going again there. So we'll have a whole bunch of stuff over on the onesready.com. Go check out Attack Elite over there. If you're looking for training gear, maybe you need to hydrate, so get yourself some Hoist or some Cardomax. Check out Mission Mercantile and a bunch of our other partners. We got a really good one coming up for you adult beverage sippers here too. So you may have been seeing some stuff on there, but Dread
That's
River.
A teaser.
That is a teaser.
Yeah.
But yeah, so much more to follow. Appreciate y'all. Thanks. Trent, you got anything else?
Nope. Train hard.